Ready to find your next favorite podcast? Start here.
Mensa is a high IQ organization founded in the UK in 1946 that requires that members take a test for admission or submit test scores with an IQ beginning at 132, then pay about $75 in member dues a year, and hopefully participate in local activities.
When there are enough other white families in a school, you reach what one study calls a bliss point. This is a real thing researchers study. How many white kids are needed at a school to make other white families feel comfortable? That number, the bliss point, is 26%.
Prior to the refinery being sited there, it was a horseshoe factory there. So this is a site that literally witnessed the transition from horse-less carriage transportation to horse-less carriage transportation.
Coming up, we'll introduce you to three new podcasts, My Year in Mensa, Nice White Parents, and OK, I Want to Know. Welcome to Start Here from Cincinnati Public Radio. I'm Trip Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Each week, we sample and highlight three podcasts to help you navigate the exploding podcast world and maybe find your next podcast obsession. Plus, get an email summary of each podcast we feature with our weekly Start Here email blast. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here blast email at the bottom of the page. And if you like what you hear, please rate us an Apple Podcast. A 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. With special thanks to Cincinnati Public Radio's Jim Nolan and Kevin Reynolds, and curation, writing, and producing from Connor Eldridge, let's start here. For high schoolers, the surest way to stack up against their fellow classmates is standardized testing. And for adults that never grow out of the need to compare themselves to their fellow citizens, there's Mensa. So gather your SAT scores and your biggest ego and join comedian Jamie Loftus on her hilarious podcast, My Year in Mensa. From taking the test as a joke to spending 3 days in Phoenix in the dead of July at the Mensa Annual Gathering, where she was public enemy number one, Jamie's journey with the exclusive high IQ organization is worth hearing. Along the way, you'll hear stories, learn about the history of Mensa, and find out whether IQ tests actually mean anything at all. Don't you want to get smarter? Here's a short sample clip from the first episode of My Year in Mensa titled IQ and the Average Girl. In the clip, Jamie lays out her plan for the podcast and explains just why and how she jokingly got in over her head with the most popular IQ club in the world.
But I'm more doing this to analyze how these sorts of groups came to be in the first place and sort of what they have evolved into, because it definitely did start as a dumb joke on my part. But people, unfortunately, contain multitudes, awful. And so what I'm going to do is take you through the story via my experiences and then go back in time to trace the history of these organizations and ultimately figure out what the fucking point of any of it was in the first place. And if you are listening from Mensa right now, hi, maybe we've met before, maybe we haven't. I hope you enjoy this and congratulations on doing well on that test once. So before we unpack this shit show as a whole, what is Mensa? I'm glad you asked. I have a prepared answer. Mensa is a high IQ organization founded in the UK in 1946 that requires that members take a test for admission or submit test scores with an IQ beginning at 132, then pay about $75 in member dues a year, and hopefully participate in local activities. So, you know, it's a smart people club, and people absolutely love to make fun of it. I used to love making fun of it, and now it just makes me tired to think about. But in short, Mensa is the most popular high IQ club on the planet. So we're going to be skipping around in time. We're going to go a little memento on this one. So we're going to make a really fun turn the page noise. Listen to this noise I found online. Oh, so bear that in mind. All right, podcast is starting. Did the disclaimer at the top. Let's hit a light music bed just to ease us in. Yeah, I have a degree in radio production, and here I am using it for the first time. And so to be clear, all of the names in this story, even ones that it agreed to or previously went on the record, have been changed. We're just keeping it clean here. So Mensa has three purposes, which are outlined in its constitution. According to the Mensa website this year, they are 1. To identify and foster human intelligence for the benefit of humanity. 2, to encourage research into the nature, characteristics, and uses of intelligence. And 3, to provide a stimulating intellectual and social environment for its members. So we're going to jump around in time a little bit. So we're going to start towards the end on July 4th, 2019, day one of the Mensa annual gathering. You do have to question the intelligence of anyone who holds a week-long conference in Arizona in July. But hey, this event was planned by some of the brightest minds in the world, I'm told.
Jamie, right?
I've been at the Mensa annual gathering in Phoenix, officially titled Mensa Rising, for all of 5 minutes, and one of the few faces I recognize from the mostly forgotten high IQ society has already spotted me. It's 10:30 in the morning on the 4th of July, and my sweat from the walk over hasn't dried yet, and I'm sort of slumping in the back of one of the Sheraton Grand's millions of beige conference rooms. There's a speaker at the front for the Aphrodisiacs Forbidden Food and Beverages talk, and he's going on about millennials and their avocado toast. And there's a room full of Mensans who are just laughing it up. And as I said, joining this group was supposed to be a joke originally, but here I am, full year later, traveling 7 hours by Greyhound to try and take it seriously. So who is the victim of the joke?
From the podcast My Year in Mensa with comedian Jamie Loftus. Learn the truth behind the League of Extraordinary Geniuses, more commonly known as Mensa, on My Year in Mensa. Available now on WVXU's Start Here podcast collection at WVXU.org. Even before COVID, our public schools have had their fair share of problems. Lack of adequate funding for arts and extracurriculars, massive gaps in education quality and curriculum, and more have plagued our public school system for years. But to understand where these problems came from and why they still exist, we have to explore the most powerful force shaping them, white parents. From Serial Productions and the New York Times comes Nice White Parents, a 5-part investigative series hosted by Hannah Jaffe Walt. With New York as the epicenter of endless public education battles, Nice White Parents dives into the history of segregation, inequality, and economic influence that's created schools made for the many, but dictated by the desires of the few. Here's a sample from the first episode of Nice White Parents titled The Book of Statuses. In the episode, Hannah follows what happens when the School of International Studies 6th grade class swells from 30, mostly Latino, Black, and Middle Eastern students, to 103, an influx comprised almost entirely of white families.
The school year went on. Rob's fundraising committee moved forward with the French embassy to plan a fundraiser. It was now being called a gala. The PTA moved forward with parent volunteers to plan a spring carnival. It was being called the spring carnival. Quiet resentments locked in place. On the phone one night, IME's co-president on the PTA, Susan Mosker, told me she worried the school was changing in ways that were damaging to the community. Susan is white herself, but she didn't come in with the new white parents. When she started, her son was one of the only white kids in the school. And now she felt like they were all being written into a narrative that wasn't true. That SIS was a bad school before, and now that the new white families had arrived, it was being turned around.
It is noticeable. I think it is something that even my child has picked up on, you know, just like a very different, you know, different feeling among some of the students and some of the parents, you know, this real sense again that here they come to save our poor, struggling school that couldn't possibly make it on its own without their money and their vision. And we do not all feel that that is necessarily the case.
What do you feel? This was a long conversation. The upshot, she's not happy with the way the new parents are behaving. It was true, a new narrative was taking hold at SIS. It's not like the kids were talking about it all the time, but it was in the air. And the kids were starting to pick up on who was valued and why. In the cafeteria, I'd hear middle schoolers saying, the French kids could kill someone and they'd get away with it. Upstairs in the high school, I'd hear kids complain, all the attention has shifted to the new middle schoolers. We're being pushed aside. And down in the library, I met 3 6th grade boys, white boys, new to SAS. They're sweaty from playing soccer and looking very small against their huge backpacks.
These boys, even at 11 years old, they've absorbed the same messages. That SAS wasn't so good before. It was a bad school.
The kids wouldn't pay attention, and they had, like, got to, like, zone out every little thing. And I bet they learned very little. And now this generation with us, I think we're doing a lot better. And I think that we're learning at a much faster pace.
He and his friends, they've turned the school around. That's what he's learning.
It's going to be one of, like, the top choices, like, already in, like, the book. Like when you're applying to middle schools, you get, like, a book sort of, like, on statuses and stuff. And I think this school is actually, like, really high up in the statuses.
Nobody calls it the book on statuses. They call it a directory of schools with info like enrollment numbers for different schools, test scores, and special programs. But I love that he calls it the book on statuses, because this is what happened at SAS. The school had a bad reputation among white families, and then suddenly it was in demand. Its status had changed because of the white kids. A powerful draw for white families into any school is other white families. When there are enough other white families in a school, you reach what one study calls a bliss point. This is a real thing researchers study. How many white kids are needed at a school to make other white families feel comfortable? That number, the bliss point, is 26%.
A long-running number one on the Apple Podcast charts, a sample of Nice White Parents from Serial Productions and the New York Times. Get educated on the state of public education in our country with the help of Nice White Parents. Available on WVXU's Start Here podcast collection page at WVXU.org or on the WVXU app. Nowadays, it seems like everything is newsworthy. Even with all the political, public health, and environmental news streaming out into the world, we still make time for celebrity gossip, fashion trends, and pop culture. But what about the stuff that falls through the cracks? Enter a new feature from WVXU, OK, I Want to Know. On the new show, you'll gain answers to your questions on topics that might not traditionally be considered newsworthy. For example, have you ever wondered who plays the organ at Great American Ballpark? Or why there aren't any statues of President Taft in Cincinnati? You can get answers to these burning, kind of boring questions and many more like them on OK, I Want to Know. Try out the show with this clip from a recent episode featuring a question Eric and Sherry Stein, a couple of listeners from Harrison, asked. They noticed a strange fenced-off piece of land in the small community of Hooven that needed some explaining. Is it a secret military complex or maybe a UFO storage site? Well, the answer, fittingly enough for OK, I Want to Know, isn't that dramatic.
But it is still interesting. Jeff Moore is a public affairs advisor for Chevron Environmental Management Company, which is overseeing the activity there now.
The site was a refinery built by Gulf Oil Company in 1931. It's actually got a bit of interesting history because prior to the refinery being sited there, it was a horseshoe factory there. So this is a site that literally witnessed the transition from horse and carriage transportation to horseless carriage transportation.
Moore says the refinery operated until the 1980s, and at the peak, the 195 employees were processing about 45,000 barrels of crude oil a day.
They produced gasoline, diesel, heating oil, asphalt, and coke.
That's coke, as in a solid byproduct of petroleum refining, not the soft drink or the narcotic. In 1984, Chevron and Gulf Oil merged, and a couple of years later, the company closed the Hooven facility. In 1993, Chevron signed an agreement with the EPA and started cleaning up the site.
Most recently, we've been working to remove impacted soil at the surface level in some isolated spots within the North Tank Farm. This is an area where the big, huge liquid storage tanks were.
He says the completion of that work will be a milestone because it means that portion will be closer to being ready for resale.
That's really part of the vision that we have for the site, that we're preparing the site to be able to sell it to a new owner who can then develop it in an appropriate way that will bring some beneficial use to the community.
Moore says in 1996, Chevron started working with a community advisory panel to plan for the future of the property. He says it will likely be zoned light industrial and commercial, But there is an opportunity for recreation because part of the site sits in a floodplain for the Great Miami River.
There are some beautiful sections of the refinery that you can't see from the highway, but there's some upland forest and riparian habitat. It's now home to white-tailed deer, turkeys, and more than 70 species of birds.
A lot of work has gone into cleaning the property.
We have a groundwater treatment system where we're actually pumping groundwater up from under the site. We're removing petroleum hydrocarbons from it. We also have a horizontal soil vapor extraction system. And what that does is that removes hydrocarbon vapors that are trapped in tiny little spaces within the soil.
There's also a wall built to stop hydrocarbons from moving with groundwater into the river. Moore says the EPA wants everything cleaned up by 2048.
Our local Cincinnati podcast feature today, Okay, I Want to Know, from WVXU. Let your curiosity run wild and hear all about Cincinnati's little mysteries and untold stories with Bill Reinhart on Okay, I Want to Know, available on WVXU's Start Here podcast collection. To the charts we go, our weekly look at the Apple Podcast charts to see what podcasts are new or up and coming around the nation by iTunescharts.net. Debuting last week was season 2 of a powerfully entertaining podcast called Counterclock, so popular that the mere drop of the season 2 trailer a few days before resulted in the podcast jumping 59 places into the top 5. Season 2 tracks the brutal stabbing of 28-year-old Stacy Stanton inside her second-story apartment. Investigative journalist Delia D'Ambra is back in her hometown on the Outer Banks of North Carolina to figure out if a man was wrongly convicted 30 years ago for the crime and if the real killer is still out there. The only way to understand Stacy's story is to move counterclockwise in time, to go backwards to the point where her clock violently stopped. That's Counterclock, top 5 on the Apple Podcast charts. To learn more about Counterclock and the other podcasts we featured today, check out the Start Here email. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and choose the Start Here newsletter from the bottom of the page. Thank you for joining us for Start Here, Cincinnati Public Radio's Discovery Podcast. For more about other podcasts we like, check out the Start Here collection at wvxu.org. It's our new specially curated collection of podcasts we think you might enjoy. Plus, check out the local podcast collection, podcasts created right here in Cincinnati by our local creators. And remember, if you've got a podcast or an episode you'd like to recommend, email us at podcast@wvxu.org. I'm Trip Eldridge for Cincinnati Public Radio, and thank you for choosing to start here.